I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. John Davis, host of Public Television's Motor Week, is here, fresh from the Chicago Auto Show. In this hour, John gives us the scoop on new car trends, and we'll hear Motor Week's top picks for the 2015 Drivers' Choice Awards, including Best in Show. It's American-made, you'll be pleased to know. And who took home awards for Best Dream Machine? Plus, from Google's driverless car to rumors that Apple is designing an electric minivan, can Silicon Valley be the new center of automotive innovation? And we'll cover auto news here at home as two car companies aim to expand sales of their electric vehicles to Marylanders. Midday on Wheels with Motor Week's John Davis after the news. Welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. I guess we'll call this hour Midday on Wheels because John Davis is with us again from Motor Week out at MPT and PBS. John, nice to see you.
Great to be here, Dan. Thanks.
John is just back from the Chicago Auto Show, so we'll hear a little bit about that. But, boy, there's a lot of news related to electric cars and technology
right.
and automobiles, or I don't know if we're going to call them automobiles in the future. Autopods.
Electric pods,
yeah.
Passenger pods.
Yeah, electric vehicles, EVs. So
all this innovation's coming not out of Detroit or Stuttgart. It's coming out of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
Ford has an office or is expanding its office in Silicon Valley. You got Apple talking about developing a car.
Right.
Google investing in Uber.
Right.
And Google may be challenging Uber when it comes to hail a cab or hail what is that? What do they call that service, John?
Well, when you you mean Uber or when you
Uber.
You basically, I don't know. That's a good question.
There's
but basically, you take
term
your,
here
take
in
your
the
smartphone and you tell them where you are, and a car shows up, and like
a ride hailing service. Right. So the news is,
except you don't have to raise your hand.
Use an app.
It's
app based. So Uber, which is out raising like $2.8 billion and has an investor in Google.
Mm-hmm.
It might be facing competition from Google, which is also thinking about developing its own ride-hailing service. Of course, they may use their own
driverless cars,
car.
At least to some degree. Yeah.
Can we talk about this a little
All
bit?
Right.
Let's start off with this, because this is really interesting. This is not news from Detroit. This is from Silicon Valley.
It is.
First of all, let's talk about Apple, the idea of Apple developing its own automobile.
Okay, it's called Project Titan, and when the Wall Street Journal and I think Bloomberg and others started leaking stuff last week, everybody stood up and took notice because they're talking about apparently an electric vehicle that looks something like a minivan, and they have been hiring away some people from the auto industry that know a little bit more about it, and they've even been talking to a company that assembles vehicles for manufacturers independently of the manufacturer, Steyr. They're a big parts supplier. So everybody's antenna are up. However, what a lot of people that are in the know think is going on here is Apple recognizes they have to completely integrate their other products and their technology into the automobile so that they will be able to sell more products in the future. So as USA Today article said, it might be more about iDash instead of iCar, that they might be looking at ways of this full integration because our lives are all tied to our smartphones and tablets, and it's only natural that these become an integral part of the car. And we're headed that way now.
Is it Mercedes or some manufacturer already has Apple integrated into the dash?
Quite a few do, and every time we see a new vehicle, there's more and more of what's on your cell phone can appear on the big screen in the middle of the dash. So that's coming, and it's actually here, as you pointed out, but I think Apple's looking at the next step. So nobody really knows what their intention is. But getting into the car business is so difficult. Just ask Elon Musk. I mean, he's not out of the woods yet. He's not making any money except on fuel economy credits, and he's got a wonderful piece of merchandise in the S sedan, and they got the new SUV coming, which, by the way, is about a year behind schedule already. It's so difficult to build a car. Maybe it's smarter to build the things that go in the car. And personally, I think that's what Apple's doing.
Apple does have a lot of money.
Oh, they've got 700 and some billion dollars. So when you figure it costs $5 to $10 billion on the outside to develop a car from scratch, that's peanuts for them. And that's the other thing that a lot of people are saying, that Google and Apple have so much money, they are looking for ways to spend it. And sometimes they're just spending it on a whim.
Let me ask you about electric cars. We've got a move in the legislature in Maryland to allow a Tesla dealership in the state.
Right, because right now they can't sell
in the state. For some technical aspect of the law. They don't actually, they have a showroom, but they don't have, you can't actually sell.
Well,
they need to be licensed as a dealer.
Yeah,
right?
and the dealer franchise laws, which is what they're fighting all over the country, basically say you've got to have a showroom, you've got to have a parking lot, you've got to have all this other infrastructure. And the dealers erected that to keep people out of the market that just want to come in on a whim. And I won't get into the historical aspect, but this goes way back to the days when car companies used to bypass dealers and sell directly themselves.
Hmm.
So all of these obstacles have been put up.
And Tesla is you order online, basically, right?
Correct. and so what they're looking at here, and they've made some accommodation in other states to say, okay, you can have a gallery, shall we say, in a mall, and you can actually sell to people because you're selling a vehicle they can't get at a normal dealer, an electric car, and in this case, a very high-end electric car. So I think all that's good. I believe in free enterprise, and people should have easy access to it. On the other hand, you want to protect the dealers, so this is a limited time thing. But you know, Dan, I expect to wake up one morning and find all of this has gone away because Tesla will either get bought by somebody else or make a deal to sell through someone else's dealerships. And my two big candidates are the two companies they work with already, and that's Mercedes and Toyota. Mercedes needs Tesla because they don't have a line of electric vehicles to compete with BMW, their arch rival. So I'm not so sure this is going to be a long fought out thing.
And I have a larger question when it comes to electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. The other bit of news regarding electric vehicles in Maryland, anyway, news from Automotive News that Chevrolet is going to begin selling the Spark EV in Maryland this spring. It says here, according to Automotive News, Mike Colias writing in January, its first East Coast entry and third state overall since the electric mini car was launched in California and Oregon 2 years ago.
And interesting enough, they make some components of it
here already
in Baltimore. This is their
In White Marsh.
This is their small EV. It's a very, very good little vehicle. And they're laying the groundwork for their new larger car, which they showed in Detroit. And this past week said they are going into production probably in 2017. And that's the Bolt. They already have
the Bolt
hybrid. And now, unfortunately, they've named this new one the Bolt.
Did you get a look at it?
Yeah, it's pretty much a box. It looks a little bit like the Spark EV, except larger. It's quite big on the inside. Here's the deal. We've all said in my side of the business that the Holy Grail was 200 miles of range and a $30,000 price tag after the government incentives. That's what the Bolt will do. Mr. Musk is also supposedly designing a car from that, but we haven't seen it yet. Some of the wags are saying, oh, well, that price really needs to be $25,000, whatever. General Motors is moving ahead on it. I think they will do it. But that technology they're using will be available for a lot of other people because they buy their batteries from, you know, other companies. So the lower price, longer range, I don't have to worry about running out of juice electric car is coming and coming fast.
Okay. Now, the larger question is about electric vehicles, the whole electric technology, the use of batteries in general. It seems like this is here to stay. We've talked about it for years. Okay, what's going on in automobile manufacturing generally? Are they all focused on it? Is every manufacturer, of course you said Mercedes needs to get into it, but is everyone focused on electric?
Interestingly, two big players, Honda and Toyota, look like they have stopped most of their pure electric car development and now are focusing on hydrogen-powered cars, which are electric cars because they use electric motors, but use a fuel cell, a hydrogen-powered fuel cell, on board for the power. Both of them have shown cars that are in production now and will be available at least to lease in California and other markets like Japan this year. These are production cars ready to go. They meet all of the safety standards. They're out the door.
What's the value of that over the benefit or the advantage that has over pure electric?
Well, over pure electric, it means that you basically, as long as you've got a pump, you can fuel up very quickly, probably in a matter of minutes instead of in a matter of, even with a DC fast charger, 45 minutes
okay.
or an hour.
All right.
So it's really the fuel up time. The problem with hydrogen fuel cells up to now is very expensive. They don't last very long. They break down after 40, 50,000 miles or less. They say they've overcome all that. They've also reduced the size of a fuel cell to about the size of a small suitcase that'll fit under the floor. You don't need as much battery. You just need a little bit of a battery there to kind of get you out of emergency situations. So you've reduced the cost.
Well, this is very
interesting. But it's very expensive still.
It's still expensive.
Think most
more expensive than the Volt, say? Or?
Yes, it's much more expensive at the moment. But once they get into production, lower the cost. What they're getting around is the high cost of batteries. The obstacle, of course, is the availability of the fuel. You're not going to basically convert this probably from natural gas in your garage. So we're a long way from seeing that. But it does sort of look like, just like Toyota pioneered the hybrid with the Prius, maybe they're looking way down the road and saying this will be the next great big thing. And electric cars, they'll be okay as a filler, but they're not the ultimate answer. It's interesting.
It really is. It really is.
410-662-8780 is the phone number for Midday. If you want to get on the line here with John Davis of MPT and PBS's Motor Week, ask him a question about what we're talking about here, the new technology, electric vehicles, driverless vehicles, possibly, from Google. Now, I want you, John, and our listeners to imagine this scenario, and because it's interesting. I think we should talk about it a little bit. This is a piece by Marco Della Cava in USA Today, who writes about technology, in this case writing about automobiles and technology, and says, imagine this in a downtown area. He references the Bay Area in San Francisco. We could think of Baltimore in this regard, okay? Privately owned gas-powered cars are banned downtown, all replaced by fleets of electric, app-summoned self-driving taxis. These autonomous and shared pods... He doesn't call them cars, are in constant circulation, allowing most of the city's parking lots to be reclaimed for real estate or parks. Air quality improves. Greenhouse gases decrease. That seems to be a vision of the future of a number of car manufacturers and tech companies that are angling toward that kind of a future, at least in downtown cities.
You are never, ever going to take the private car away from Americans. But
private gas-powered.
It's not going to happen.
We're not going to take them away, but just you could restrict an area downtown? You don't think so?
Yes, I do think you can. Because we're already seeing Europe basically head in this direction. They're talking about making what we might call quiet zones in the center of major cities like Paris and London, where you cannot have an internal combustion engine car running during certain times of the day. So that's why a lot of the European manufacturers are looking at plug-in hybrids where you've got a little bit bigger battery, so you can drive about 14 to 20 miles on the battery. So you drive into the city normally like you would, hit the button when you get into the city, it reverts to battery power, you drive in, you park, you leave the city, and you go home.
Nice and quiet.
It's something, you know, it's basically the Chevrolet Volt that we have now, except it would be restricted to run the gas engine inside the city. That is coming in Europe, and if it comes there, it'll probably come here.
Can you imagine people getting in and out of self-driven, self-driving taxis to get from, I don't know, East Baltimore to West Baltimore to go from...
I might have a problem myself, but I think that I think a younger generation that's not as much tied to the car could. And I also think that older individuals who are lacking mobility to be able to call up and not worry about having a driver in there that maybe it's somebody they don't really know or are uncomfortable with, as long as, you know, all the other safeguards. But I do think it's going to be restricted to lower speeds, inner city, at least for a long time.
Okay.
Because if anything goes wrong when you're out on a highway, just think about the mayhem that could happen. We are less than a year away from the first self-driving regular cars to be marketed. Both Cadillac and Audi said a year from now, they will have a car that will be able to drive in congested traffic during rush hour with hands off the wheel. And Cadillac says theirs you'll be able to use in limited conditions even on the open highway. Well, all I can say is I hope they get it right, because any mistakes and anything going wrong will kill the self-driving car. Yeah. But it's closer than you think.
Wow. John Davis from Motorweek, 410-662-8780. Always interesting when John visits us. We'll take a break here, take some phone calls. You can also send us an email with a question, midday@wypr.org. Later on in the show, the 2015 Motorweek Driver's Choice Awards, including, what's that category? Best Dream Machine. Yeah, we're going to hear about that. So anyway, short break here. We'll be back for some more with John Davis after this. The New York Times reporting today that Uber has expanded its round of venture financing by $1 billion, according to documents filed Wednesday with the Delaware Secretary of State, bringing the total capacity for this round of money raising to $2.8 billion for Uber. And also I wanted to mention Uber has moved to the campus of Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, opening the Uber Advanced Technology Center on that Pittsburgh campus, of course, fine engineering school, right, and deep into robotics. And, John, you said electric
vehicles. They've done a lot of work in electric vehicles as well.
Boy. So what is that a sign of? That maybe they're going to develop their own self-driving cab, a taxi?
Or one that happens to have a non-polluting engine, like electric or hydrogen fuel cell, because ideally, I'm sure they'd like to be able to rely on a much cleaner vehicle than what they're probably using. I mean, right now they're using private vehicles, and maybe they'll go the next step and say, we'll actually own the vehicles and start putting drivers in them just like a traditional taxi cab. Because some markets, they're not going to be able to get around all the restrictions, and they want to grow. So they've got to look at the existing situation with taxis and all the restrictions, and they can't fight it forever. At some point, they've got to try to make peace with it, and maybe it's to get into the Uber-style taxi electric vehicle business. Who knows?
Hey, you mentioned something to me before we got on the air that I thought was interesting for our listeners about Uber in Chicago.
Uber in Chicago, while I was there for the Chicago Auto Show, I read a little piece in the paper that their app in Chicago has to have a panic button on it. It's not nationwide, but if you're in one and you don't like the driver, or he's not taking you where you're supposed to go, you can hit it and it summons help. I'm not clear on whether it brings the police or someone comes on the line, but basically it is something for protection, and I frankly think that will spread.
Have you tried it yet, or have you been anywhere where people are using Uber?
Yes. I tried to download it on my phone. My phone's not new enough. Oh. Okay. At the Detroit Auto Show, I'm standing out in the middle of nowhere after some press event at a warehouse in a snowstorm, waiting for the shuttle bus to show up. It's cold. It's a mess. Here comes one of my friends. He walks up. Here comes the Uber car that he took to the event. He hops in. He goes back to the hotel.
Ordered it on his app.
Ordered it on his phone. It arrived. He was out there maybe 30 seconds. I had been out there for like 30 minutes. And I thought, right then and there, I said, this is for me.
John Davis is our guest in this hour of midday, the host of MPT and PBS's Motorweek. 410-662-8780. If you have a question about a car you're thinking of buying, a new model, a used car, previously owned vehicle, whatever you like, ask a question. Or if you want to join our conversation here about technology and automobiles and the electric car or nitrogen or hydrogen.
You put in the tires.
Yeah,
maybe.
Thank you. Here's Michael in Pennsylvania in Glen Rock. Thanks for calling in, Michael.
Thank you for having me ask my question. Quick comment first. I've always been frustrated about the talk of innovative technology while we still depend on century-old internal combustion engines. So I'm glad to hear that EVs are becoming more mainstream. My question is, why hasn't there been any talk of getting around the range issue of EVs by incorporating things like linear motor technology into highways? And without getting into the technical details, this would essentially allow an EV to travel from New York to L.A. without even having to stop to charge up.
Are you talking about basically having the electric supplied in the roadway?
Not to charge the battery
but to run
the motor, but to propel the vehicle using linear motors a simple metal plate on the bottom of the vehicle and having the motor part, the stator, if you will, embedded in the roadway?
The simple answer is construction costs. The business I'm in, we've been looking at self-driving cars with smart highways almost since I started in the business back in the early 80s. And what's happened is everyone's figured out that it's a whole lot cheaper to put everything in the car and keep it upgraded instead of building essentially a limited number of highways that the vehicle wouldn't be able to work on when it wasn't on them. So the visions of the Jetsons flying around with vehicles that depend on smart highways, that's probably not going to happen, but the smarts will be there. It'll be in the car, and the cars will communicate with each other. The other question, though, is the idea of getting electric power into the car without contact. I don't think we're going to see it on the highways, but we are probably going to see it in your garage when you roll in with an electric car. You won't have to plug it in. They have to get over the what happens if the cat walks over this mat while it's under the car charging.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Well, I hadn't either, but somebody else has. But almost anything's possible, but I think cost is the biggest answer.
John, I'm glad you mentioned the Bolt EV. Mm-hmm. You said you got to look at this at the Chicago Auto Show.
Detroit,
I'm sorry. Yep. So this is meant to... This is compete with the Volt? Here's a question that came in by email from Ed on this. He says, with the upcoming 200-mile electric Chevrolet Bolt EV, could it eventually make the Volt and the Spark EV irrelevant?
It could, but I think the range would have to be much greater, because right now you can buy a Volt, the new one will drive up to 50 miles, they say, on electric power alone. But with the gas engine, it'll go 400 miles. I think we're not going to see a practical electric car that will do that for a very long time, unless it's something very expensive like a Tesla. So I think there's a market for both. And remember, the reason manufacturers have to do this, even though gas is cheap, is because we have corporate fuel economy laws that, unless they get repealed by a new administration, they have targets they have to meet in the next few years, and they need all this stuff to do it.
Can we just talk about the price of this for a moment? $30,000. Remember, you said,
With the incentives.
Okay.
Right.
You said that
the
Holy Grail was $30,000.
And 200-mile range under optimal conditions, which really means about 150 miles.
There are people out there spending well over $30,000 for automobiles today.
The average car that we get in, be it a family sedan or what, is well over $30,000.
Okay. You mean for reviews at Motor Week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
I'm trying to think of the person who wants this. If you're going to spend that kind of money, if you live in or near a city and you got a 200-mile range, I mean, how often do you drive 200
Probably
miles?
The whole idea is to do it once a week. You use a car for commuting or whatever. On the weekends, you come home. Maybe you get into something bigger. You plug it in, and it uses all weekend to charge if you don't have a special charger.
Right.
And so that's the idea. But it's more than that. It's if I'm downtown and I get a call that my child has been taken to a hospital and the hospital is on the other side of town, can I get there and then get home? It's that kind of situation. And, of course, when it gets cold, these cars lose range. When it gets really hot, these cars lose range. So you want that margin. The average electric car today, not talking again about Tesla, it has a 100-mile maximum range, really 80 under most conditions, and you start worrying about 60 miles in.
We'll take a phone call here for John, 410-662-8780. Let's go to Kim in Whitehall with her question. Kim, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was watching a news special, I think it was Leslie Stahl was driving a car where it was taken over by a guy proving that, you know, the cars can be hacked. So my question is, how is the auto industry addressing the issue of someone hacking into a car, you know, corrupting it or whatever? And then secondly, if these cars will be upgradable, or if after a couple of years the whole car becomes obsolete and you drive it to the recycling center.
Situation is happening with aircraft right now. Some of the computers, a 20-year-old airplane, they can't even upgrade the computers anymore. So the modern car today gets upgraded every time you take it in for service. They plug it in and the computer gets flashed. So I think they will have to at least make the car upgradable for a period of 10 years, which is more than most of your consumer electronics. As far as the hacking, we've already had a serious situation with BMW just in the past month where cars got hacked into. People could get into the car. They couldn't start it, but they have a new interface system, and it's been prone to hacking. The car makers have to do absolutely everything they can. The only good news is maybe that the software will be so different between different car companies. One hack probably won't suit all. And also, cars will need to be relatively stationary probably for this to happen. Otherwise, the transmitter that would be needed to hack in has to be huge, or they have to get into the cell system. Hmm. But it's a huge issue. I mean, I'm not downplaying at all, and they need to make sure they've done everything they can. And I think they haven't yet. I think they know it, but I don't think they put the resources there.
Aaron in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling Midday.
Hi. I just had a simple question. Maybe not that simple, but I always hear about these hydrogen cars and conversion kits that you can buy
right.
for older engines. And I'm just wondering why the industry doesn't kind of sell the new cars that way, make hydrogen as you go. The older gearheads can update their combustion engines, and in return it would really sell the newer cars also if people see that technology out on the street and running a lot cleaner.
Well, I have a lot of friends at the U.S. Department of Energy, and they claim that they've never seen one of these in-car hydrogen systems that actually works. I can't say for myself, but you know, when something in the auto industry is too good to be true, it usually is. And that ranks right up there with the perpetual motion machine. So I'm just not sure that it's there. I've never actually seen one that works. So if it works, you know, people think, oh, they're ignoring technology. Believe me, if something worked that the car makers could shave fuel economy and stop paying all these millions of dollars of fines to the government, they would use it. So I don't believe that something's out there that's practical that works.
Kim in Howard County calling our show for John Davis of Motor Week. She's a lifelong foreign car owner, but wants to know what you think about the Buick Verano. Yeah, I know she's gone. I know what her question
okay.
is. Okay,
Buick
Thank
Verano.
You.
It's their compact vehicle from mm-hmm. Buick. It's a very good car. It is selling like crazy to the extent that it's actually taken sales away from larger Buicks. Excuse me, nothing negative to say about it. It will get redesigned within the next year, but it's a fine, small, luxury car.
What did you drive over here today, John? You always drive something different.
I have the new Mini Cooper four-door sedan, which is the Mini Cooper Coupe, but now they've actually put two regular doors on the back of it.
I thought that's been out for a while, no?
It just came out in the last few months. They've had a variety of, they have their SUV, they've had the wagon, but this is looks more like, it's not really a sedan, it still has a hatch in the back, but it's more like their coupe, but just with two extra doors.
So would this be your first impression that I would be
yeah.
asking for?
Yep. And my first impression is I love Mini Coopers. I mean, I've owned one since 2001. I like the extra flexibility of having the back doors without also having to use either a beefed up body like the SUV they make and so forth.
Hmm.
So I like it. It doesn't seem to detract from the sportiness of the coupe.
We're going to take another break here on Midday. Dan Rodericks with John Davis of MPT and PBS's Motor Week. If you have a question, please give us a ring. This is a good time to call, 410-662-8780. And our email address, I got a couple of emails to read for John, midday@wypr.org. I hope this doesn't sound like a stupid question, but can you buy a hydrogen-powered car now?
You'll be able to lease them in California soon. The Mirai from Toyota, and there's also one from Honda, a counter vehicle, that are compact to mid-size sedans. They meet all of the safety standards, and they are in production.
I got FCX Clarity. Does that sound
that's
right?
That's the old one.
Oh,
that's
the old
one. That's
Honda.
One that they did explore a couple of years back. My memory's failing me today as far as
what they call the new one that they're developing.
Yeah.
That's Honda.
It's Honda.
But
the
Toyota is Mirai,
M-I-R-A-I.
Okay.
Sounds right.
Okay.
They showed production versions within the last couple months. And I saw them both at Detroit, so they're basically well along.
History of dealers, dealerships and car companies, Joe writes in to say, as I vaguely remember, in the 1980s, Ford bought a number of dealerships
Correct.
In and around Indianapolis, he says. The model that they were test driving was company-owned showrooms and independent garages as service shops. Does John remember that?
You bet I do. It was in direct competition to franchise dealers. They fought it using some of the same franchise laws they are now using against Tesla. It was a bad experiment, and it went away.
That was Lee Iacocca?
No, that was after him. That was after him. That yeah. was I've forgotten who was running Ford at the time. It was a lot of young people that were looking to do the same thing that Tesla does, and that is circumvent the independent businessmen who don't always do what the companies want.
Let's take another call for John Davis of Motor Week. Kenny in Baltimore, go right ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I always thought about this idea, of even like back, you know, 20 years ago about electric cars. And I always had this vision, like I know, your guest mentioned the part about the they have a limited range, like 80 miles or 100 miles before the battery needs to be recharged. And I always thought, like, if you're driving, let's say, even 100 miles and before your battery runs out, so think about like a battery station instead of a gas station where you can just pull in and within minutes they can replace that battery with a fully charged one, and that would give you another 100 miles.
Funny you should mention that. They actually have been experimenting with that in Tokyo, where they had some vehicles running around like taxis that had a battery that you would take out and put back in. I don't know whether it's still going on, but the problems are fairly obvious. Everybody would have to use a standard battery. Every time you connect and disconnect something like that, you're causing wear on connectors. All the batteries in battery-powered cars now have cooling systems on them and heating systems so that they'll perform better in cold and hot. That would have to be standardized. So there's a lot of problems that would keep that from happening unless it was a fleet vehicle and you had lots of them and a company had them. Mm-hmm. So they've looked at it, but I haven't heard anything recently that says that's going to happen.
But if I'm an executive at Jiffy Lube, I'm right. looking down the road, right. I'm thinking...
No more oil changes.
Jiffy battery, Jiffy charge,
correct.
Right?
Now, Jiffy charge is something else again. There's a big push to put in what's called a DC fast charger that will charge your vehicle up to 80% in about 45 minutes. Hmm. They're building a corridor of them between here and New York. Some of them are already there, where that's much faster than you can do even at home with a 240-volt circuit. That is being looked at. A lot of companies from General Electric who makes some of those units on down. Honda has announced they're trying to aggressively put those in. The U.S. Park Service is talking about putting them in parks so that you can rent an electric vehicle at an airport, drive it your whole time you're in a major park, and then drop it back off without an internal combustion engine. There's a lot going on with the fast chargers.
I met a woman at a gas station last fall, John, who was pumping gas into a Volt. So I had to ask her.
Right.
She was from California.
Yeah.
She said she got from California to Maryland on a tank of gas.
That's a long way. The average Volt buyer is telling General Motors they're going 970 miles between fill-ups.
Okay, she was doing better. I was a little surprised at that, too.
Yeah,
but she said she was able to find,
enough charging.
I guess she charted out her...
Yeah, she must have not been in a hurry.
Yeah, no, she wasn't. Yeah, that was another thing. Yeah, very interesting. Bob in Anne Arundel County, we'll go to you next. Hi.
Hi. Hey, I find this very interesting, and thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering about reliability on the batteries. You know, I drive my cars for a long time, 8-10 years. Are they going to last that long?
Yes, so far. Now, the older style batteries, the nickel metal hydride that Toyota's been using in the Prius since the beginning, there have been Priuses on the road for well over a decade. There have been no reports of extreme battery breakdown. Sure, they lose some capabilities, but even at the end of 10 years, 50-60% of their capability left at a minimum. Lithium batteries, we're not sure yet, but it does look like that that battery technology is going to keep these batteries on the road for a minimum of 10 years. And I wouldn't be surprised to see if that warranty is not there's already about an 8-year warranty in most cases. I wouldn't be surprised to see the battery warranty extended beyond that.
Let's take a call from a city dweller. This is Gavin in Fells Point. You're on with John Davis of Motor Week.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a comment and a question, a comment specifically about Uber.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead, Gavin.
Okay. Well, I'm 30 years old. I live in Fells Point, and I'm from New York. So I'm kind of used to easily being able to get to Amtrak or Greyhound, and Uber is by far the greatest thing that has ever happened to me. I mean, before Uber, I used to have to walk around and hunt for a cab.
Right.
It would make me late. I mean, and it's cheap. I mean, I really do appreciate Uber, and I don't even know what to do if Uber wasn't around at this point. But with regard to my question, I have a lot of friends from the East Coast. I went to the University of Pennsylvania. I lived in New York for about a decade. And, you know, they're urban, they're progressive, they're interested in these electric vehicles. But I wonder what's going to happen when you consider how many of us, I don't know anyone who has a driveway or a garage. There's got to be an option for people who park on the street.
Yes, some cities are looking at putting chargers on the street.
Extension cords,
that doesn't work.
Hey, honey, run this through the window. Run that through the window for me.
That's where DC fast chargers, where you could basically pull into a spot and charge them up and then go get your car and park it. But, yeah, it's a real issue, and they have not come out with a solution for – it doesn't even have to be in a city. Just think of an apartment dweller or someone who's got a condo and you got a couple spots outside your condo to park your car. You don't want to have an extension cord across the driveway.
It has to be part of the urban planning.
Well, they're looking at, being able to transmit electricity through the air, and I think everybody thinks that may eventually happen, although we're a long way from that happening.
Another call. This is Clarence in Baltimore. Oh, back on this technology of electric cars and the
can
roads.
You hear me?
Clarence,
hello,
hold on.
Can you hear me?
Clarence is having trouble hearing me. Okay. Clarence, hold on a second, okay? I'm going to introduce you again. This is the same subject that came up earlier about...
like maglev trains at Disney World and stuff like that.
And Clarence, you wanted to ask John, it's something we covered earlier about the electric cars and the roads they drive on, right?
Yeah, and regular maintenance intervals on the expressways, it's not too difficult to mix the magnetic particles into the asphalt or the concrete. I mean, that doesn't seem terribly expensive to me if you're going to induce the magnetic field that way with just a mixture of the right particle composition that you need to induce a magnetic field for the car to pick up as it's moving down there. I mean, you could plan that at minimum cost.
Well, it sounds like a good idea, and I don't disagree with you, but, they said the same thing about magnetic levitation trains when Disney World started using them, and we haven't seen those proliferate either, so there must be something there that I don't understand about it.
Aaron in Edgewood writes in to say that this past summer I was in Europe, and my wife and I got a taxi. It was a Mercedes-Benz hybrid diesel. John mentioned that Mercedes-Benz needs something to compete with BMW. There are many models of Mercedes-BMW, and many other manufacturers that are available in Europe, but no concerted effort to bring them to the U.S.
Well, that's not quite true. I mean, you can get basically some mild hybrids from the Europeans here that they sell over there. The diesel hybrid has sort of not taken off like a lot of people thought it might, largely because you don't get a quantum leap over fuel economy from a gas hybrid, and diesel fuel in this country costs much more. Mm-hmm. Now, diesel fuel in Europe still costs less, and that's why there's a bit of an appetite for it. Here, it probably would be kind of, by the time you pay the extra cost for beefing up a hybrid system to run with a diesel engine, because it has to be stronger, you're paying for the extra fuel economy and you're not really saving any money. So most everything that seems viable in Europe actually is coming here now, but we pay a lot more for diesel than the Europeans do.
Nicole is in Rosedale, our next caller on Midday for John Davis. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. I was calling because my mother actually has a, I think, a 2005 or 2006 Toyota Prius. The car is from Canada, so the laws are different.
Mm-hmm.
But she has never gotten the oil change.
Oh.
And yes. And
How many miles are on the vehicle? Do you know?
I believe it's about between 30,000 and 40,000 kilometers. She says that the oil is not dirty. That they check it regularly, and there's no oil disappearing, and it's not dirty.
Yeah, but that's not what you have to go by.
Yeah.
Oil has additives in it that protect the engine. and they disappear as far as effectiveness, certainly by 10,000 miles, and in many cases a shorter time than that. There's also a situation of very fine particles getting into the oil that can cause damage. At this point, with 30,000 kilometers, what does that work out to? Something in the area of 22,000 miles or so. There's probably a little damage done. It's probably not too bad. I would take it to, if it was mine, I would take it to a Toyota dealer, and I would have them change the oil and change the filter. I don't think I'd tell them about the 40,000 kilometer bit, but just that they would put their filter, their oil in it, and I think that's probably the best that she can do. But it should be changed more frequently. Personally, even with the best oil out there, I like to change it around 5,000 to 7,000 miles.
John, this is an interesting email from Ben in Harford County regarding Kia's new EV.
Yes. He said, can you ask, the Soul EV.
Yeah, he says it's on a Soul chassis.
Yes.
Ben says that from what I heard, it has a 94-mile range, the longest outside of a Tesla S, and is priced in the mid-$20,000 range after the tax credit. And are these available now?
You betcha. It's really? Our green car of the year.
Oh my goodness. We have to go through our list of Motor Week's Driver's Choice Awards, and you say it's the green car of the year.
It's the first all-electric car we've ever given our green award to, our eco-friendly award. We really like it because it's the first time that you've had a practical electric car that has a lot of volume to carry things in the back. There's other great electric cars.
I like
the
Soul. I like how
it
looks.
The Soul EV is terrific. And yeah, a stripper will run you about 25, but you're going to spend closer to 30. But it doesn't matter. If you're into the electric car market, it's the way to go. Its mileage, its just range is not any appreciably different than anything else that's in that pricing area. But we like it a lot.
So if you're out on the highway, you've got one of these, and you're driving up the New Jersey Turnpike, you're going to use gasoline, obviously, because your range is only, according to Ben's note
here.
Yeah,
but that's a pure electric. The Soul EV is pure electric.
Oh, there's no gasoline.
There's nothing like the
motor. I'm sorry.
That's why
I'm thinking hybrid. I'm thinking hybrid still. So you don't have a backup.
Nope. That's why I keep coming back to something like.
Excuse me, I just had an epiphany. I'm sorry. I just realized. What
no,
we're
you're toast.
About. I'm just realizing this is it. We're talking about electric vehicles. They are just all electric.
Right. There's no backup.
Okay, so you're back on the New Jersey Turnpike. So you get past the Delaware Memorial Bridge. I mean, can you stop and get electric up? It just takes so long to recharge.
There are a number of websites that show where there are charging systems, but here's the rub there. You've got to make sure your vehicle is compatible because these DC fast chargers, or what they call level 3 chargers, not all electric cars can use them, only the newer ones. So you've got to make sure you're compatible. But frankly, there's a lot of websites out there. Even when you buy one of these electric vehicles, they will show you where that information exists. And there's more added every day.
John notes, this is John writing in by email, Volkswagen has talked about solid-state batteries instead of the lithium-ion technology now used as a way to get one charge range up to 400 miles.
Fine. It's not here.
It's not here yet.
I can show you articles from 1965 where Ford Motor Company was talking about revolutionary sulfur batteries. There's a lot of talk about batteries. We have not seen that huge breakthrough for capacity and low cost. Maybe Mr. Musk's Gigafactory will do that, but who knows?
Two questions from Scott in Towson. Will the Fiat 500e electric, no gasoline engine, go nationwide soon?
Yes, I think so. Again, though, you're talking about a vehicle that has about, you know, on a good day, 80-mile range, and on a bad day, more like 60.
How about Charlotte wants to know about solar-powered pod cars? Have you seen anything there? She says that they're being developed in Sweden.
Well, you know, solar power is being developed in a lot of places for use in cars. I mean, you can even get a solar panel on the newest Prius that helps, you know, kind of keep a trickle charge to the battery and run some of the accessories. So far, I'm not aware of anybody that's got a solar-powered practical car that will, you know, power the whole car. We have had around-the-world races of solar-powered cars, one we even participated in, but they were, you know, super lightweight and very tiny motors, and you sort of wore it rather than anything else. But solar power's got potential, but what happens when the sun's not out?
John,
then you got to have a big battery anyway.
Because you don't have a gasoline backup. John, about technology on board. Mm. We didn't talk much about that today. Vehicle to vehicle, we didn't talk about that. But on board technology, a question from Kathy who says, which autos have the most advanced technologies for blind spot detection, active lane keeping, et cetera? She says, I have a Mercedes C2012, and I'm thinking of looking at the new version.
Okay, yeah. The Mercedes S-Class probably is the most advanced car in the world as far as all of this onboard technology as a prelude to a self-driving car, and they're putting most of it into the brand new C-Class. So if she wants that technology, she has to pay for a couple of very expensive packages, but it's there.
You said you drove a four-door Cooper over here today.
Right.
This is a question from Dave. It says, I guess the new four-door Mini replaces the Clubman with the cute two doors at the rear?
Well, no, they're still making a Clubman. Whether they'll keep making it or not, I don't know.
You pronounce it Clubman?
Clubman.
That's how Clubman. A British... No, that's how a British
Clubman.
Person... The Clubman.
Clubman.
Boy, bring the Clubman around front. In Baltimore, you say the Clubman. I'm sorry.
But he's absolutely right. A lot of people don't like the double doors. They'd rather have a hatch.
Do you know the MPG on it, he says?
No, not off the top of my head.
An RE the Volt.
Go to fueleconomy.gov.
What do you think of the turbo on the GM Chevy Sonic?
Turbochargers these days are fine. They don't use water to cool them anymore. I mean, they don't use oil to cool them anymore. They use water, which keeps running even after the engine's off. Turbos today last a lot longer than even 10, 15 years ago.
What do you think of the quality of the questions on this show today?
I think they're pretty
think
tuned in.
I think this is your higher quality question shows.
Absolutely.
Here's one from Elizabeth.
I learned the hard way not to challenge your viewers, your listeners, sorry.
Yeah, you're used to saying viewers.
Yeah, I'm used to saying viewers. Faux pas, slap me.
Elizabeth says, hi, exclamation point. Yeah. She says, we need a new car that has great steering and maneuverability. I wonder where she lives. Anyway, great gas mileage and enough room to fit 4 to 5 tall mm-hmm. adults with luggage room, too, and from the airport, we're thinking SUV style. I guess you are. 4 to 5 tall adults, 5'9" and taller.
But you don't have to. There's any number of fine sedans that you can get a much better deal on from the Subaru Legacy, which is standard all-wheel drive, which we picked as our family car of the year, Honda Accord, Toyota Camry, the new Hyundai Sonata. There's a lot of sedans out there that will meet all of those specifications.
Steering, and maneuverability.
All of that, plus get a lot better fuel economy than even a good SUV.
2015 Motor Week Driver's Choice Awards, Best Small Car, the Volkswagen Golf, Best Family Sedan, you just mentioned, Subaru Legacy. Best Convertible, oh, I guess you had fun with this, John, the BMW 4 Series.
Yeah, we're looking at 4 places. You know, we'd like to pick a convertible that you can lease double date in. And there's not a lot of super new ones right now. And this one's a little on the high side, but it's a great car.
A couple of American cars in here. I want to mention the Best Luxury Sedan, Cadillac CTS.
2 years in a row. Lots of new competition. We still thought the CTS stood out.
Best Sports Sedan, the Dodge Charger. Best Sports Coupe. Good old Ford Mustang.
The new 50th anniversary Mustang is a revelation as far as that car. New independent rear suspension drives more like a Corvette than a traditional Mustang.
I'm glad you mentioned the green car in here. The best eco-friendly car, Kia Soul EV, which you mentioned. Best pickup truck, there's the Ford F-150 again.
All aluminum body. We like it. We think it's a revolutionary vehicle. Not everybody agrees. That's a very controversial vehicle.
Now, I'm guessing out at Motor Week you had an argument over Best Dream Machine because there's 3 here.
We always pick 3.
You always pick 3.
Say if you win the lottery or the Powerball, okay, there's something for everybody. Super high performance but practical, the Audi RS7 sedan. Big V8 powered brute, but gorgeous car. BMW i8, that's the BMW electric hybrid, basically has an electric motor at one end and a gas motor at the other. And for absolutely off the charts, the Ferrari LaFerrari. Or some people just say LaFerrari, the Ferrari.
Does that have Apple technology in the dashboard?
Not that
I'm aware
of.
One?
It's because got prancing
Okay, it's got what?
Prancing horse technology. It might have Siri, but I'm not aware of it.
I had a picture here of a Ferrari dashboard that showed the Apple's CarPlay.
They had probably the dashboard. It could be. That certainly looks like it.
John, this has been fun. Excellent questions today from our listeners,
certainly
too.
Certainly have been.
Thank you very
it's
much.
It's always a pleasure, Dan.
John Davis is the host, longtime host of the longtime show, great show, Motor Week, produced here at MPT for PBS. Check them out and check out their website if you want more information about their Driver's Choice Awards. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Dan.
And thank
Anytime.
You, everybody. Yeah, stay tuned. We've got a second hour of Midday coming up. Rona Cobell and Midday on the Bay coming your way after the news.